low quality fans
of a high quality Bruins team. That is a dub. It's a dub. It's a dub because I'm back. From my honeymoon and my wedding and all that great stuff, it was awesome. It was fantastic. Thank you for asking. But it's also a dub because the Boston Bruins, in a house money year, are in the playoffs with a 100-point season. David Pastrnak hit 100 points himself. That's crazy. Geeky had like 37 goals or something, which was crazy. Frazier Mitten, Murat Husnadinov, James Hagans all look good, and they look like they could be the future, part of the future of this team. There's so much to love about this year. It's a dub. But I said house money, and I want to talk about that for a second. We are going to break down this whole first round series against Buffalo. I'm going to talk about a lot of numbers and things like that. You remember, if the Bruins go on a deep run here, the first round preview is far more about the numbers of both sides. If we continue to move on, those other previews will be less about the numbers and more about play styles of these teams matching up. There's a method to the madness. But, so we are going to get into all that. I have a couple announcements to make beforehand, but I do want to make one statement about the house money conversation that we've had. My forehead looks really big right now. Well, house money conversation that we had. I am still full house money. We're an underdog in this series. We should be the underdog in this series, in my opinion. I look at this roster and I go, at a lot of parts of it, I'm still a house money kind of guy. The pressure is off. If you win this series, I'm going to be ecstatic. If you lose this series, I have a whole gallon of copium to sift through, right? I can cope. But many of you, I've seen the house money conversation has become, why is it house money? You are in Pasternak's prime. You are in McAvoy's prime. You're in Swayman's prime. Why is this house money? You should be making the playoffs with superstar talent at your disposal. You should be competing. And unless you're doing a full tank job, the NHL, the game of hockey, is random enough and the margins are thin enough that the expectation should always be to win. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's an opinion, much like my house money one. So we can agree to disagree. But I think it's a fair opinion to have right now. The problem I'm having is what I previously said about looking at the roster and going, because it's portions of it, right? Aspero's done an admirable job. You're very happy with what Aspero's been, and this is found money right there, right? Like, worst case scenario, you have a 7th D who you don't hate. He's playing top pairing minutes with Charlie McAvoy, and he's been good. He's also been really bad in moments, too. For some reason, a lot of people refuse to acknowledge that. But largely, he's been very good, and you're very happy with that. I'm not putting a team in contender status when Jonathan Aspero is your top pairing left-handed defenseman. I think that's fair. There's several aspects to the team where I go, I don't know. Here's the fun thing, though, is whether you're on the house money or not house money side, either side, many of us, almost all of us, have said something along the lines of, this team, if they make the playoffs, plays a style that's going to make them a tough out. They can win series by dragging teams into the abyss with them and beating them there. I really like that imagery. I think everyone can agree on that if you're in any way taking an optimistic view of the playoffs. I am surprised by how many I've seen taking a very pessimistic view of the playoffs. You could do that in an optimistic way. You know that, right? Like, do what I'm doing. House money. I don't have a lot of pressure on the success of this run, but I am psyched by every minute of playoff hockey we get. It's still going to be heartbreaking if we lose, obviously. That doesn't really change anything. The people who are super negative like to pretend two things. Well, I guess not all. It's a generalization, right? Because some of them are just truly beaten down by the world of hockey, and eventually it just gets to you, and you're like, I'm just going to be negative about things. But there is a subclass of those people who is like, I am going to be negative because it means I get to act smarter than everybody else when it fails, even though there's like a 98% chance you don't win the cup. But the other side of that, what they like to really pretend, is that the losses don't hurt them because they knew it was coming. It still hurts them. It still hurts them. They're lying to you. They're liars. I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic, but I'm still going to go under the house money title here. I think that's fair. All right, a couple of announcements real quick. Got to get done. The first one and most important one. From April 1st, because it's going to be easier for me on the books to just do it this way. Yeah, it's going to take some more money, but whatever. From April 1st until the end of the playoffs, any piece of money that is made by this channel is going to a charity. We talked about this earlier in the season, and honestly, if we did next to nothing on this channel, we're still looking at least a few hundred dollars that's going there just from sitting still, which will be really cool. But I'd like to make this special. So any donation that you make, whether it's during a live stream or a video, anything like that, if you become a member, or if you're still a member, right, that's just continuing, every month when that charge hits, that's all going to charity. Any piece of financial support you send this channel until the end of the playoffs, starting April 1st till then, that's going to charity. Cool. The charity that we have selected is the Charlie Davidson Children's Cancer Fund. This is the longest running charity through Mass General Brigham. This was suggested by Jimbo D on Twitter. And after some research, I felt like this was a good option. I was initially going to look for something that is closer to my heart in the sense of, like, I love animals and I work for a veterinary hospital, things like that. But kids with cancer is just one of the most unfair things about this planet. And there's never going to be a bad option when it comes to a charity taking care of the most vulnerable of our society facing what is largely one of the most tragic diseases one can get. So thank you, Jimbo D, for the suggestion. I really appreciate it. We did some research into it. It looks like the vast majority of the funds received go directly towards treatment research or bettering the lives of those facing these kind of struggles. So all of that will be linked below as well. Another quick announcement, the Playoff Bracket Challenge is back. I know this announcement's coming super, super late, and I apologize for that. Again, I just dropped the ball on a lot of this stuff with a few weeks ago, obviously, all my stuff happening. Personal life gets in the way. I genuinely don't feel bad about it, though, because this was a huge, huge moment of my life, and I am very, very happy and pleased by how it all went. I mean, the wedding was perfect. The honeymoon was perfect. My wife rocks. High-quality wife. Sorry. Okay, I'm in love. Leave me alone. The Playoff Bracket Challenge is back. I believe you still get a chance to enter up until the end of day one, I think, something like that. But if you see this video, get in there right now, make a bracket real quick. The winner will get a free jersey. Please try to reach out to me immediately after this. Don't delay months and then check. Reach out to me, have your bracket, everything. Make it easier. And of course the jersey will be coming likely from Fanatics or anything like that. We can't afford the made in Canada authentics, things like that, but we'll get you a jersey and it won't be some $40 knockoff. I promise you that. But that will also be linked below with the password. And then we have a channel in the Discord to talk about it where people are making their predictions. And, of course that's getting chippy right away, but in a very fun way. Lastly, I know there's a lot of talk about the Toronto pick. They have finished fifth worst in the league. So if nothing changes from the lottery, we don't see that pick. About a coin flip, odds-wise, 58%, I think, is the chance for the Bruins to get it. Basically, what is required is someone outside of the top five needs to jump into the top five, and the Toronto Maple Leafs cannot jump into first or second. Like, Leafs can't win the lottery, and we need someone who has a pretty low chance of jumping up there to jump up. But you combine all those teams that have a low chance and it turns into a moderate chance. I would not lose sleep about it until May 5th when they actually do the lottery. This is why the conversations about this pick leading up to this point, like, yes, we would explain it and talk about it, but I really can't get too invested because I know that a random ping pong ball could ruin this or make it way better. So I can't commit mental energy towards that. I don't think you should either. Wait till May 5th. You'll see it at that point. If you would have questions about the stipulations for it, feel free to ask. I'll break it all down again. But other than that, just don't lose sleep over this. Boston versus Buffalo. Let's have the conversation. We're going to go bit by bit here. This is a weird structure, but I want to go over the year comparisons versus the last 30-ish days. Not 30-ish days, 30-ish games for them. And we'll kind of break it down from there. There is an important point to make. Yes, I have spent the last 5 years on this channel making fun of Buffalo. Anything that happens to the Bruins during this series was, in a negative fashion, was my fault, and I deserve it. Okay, got that out of the way. The year-by-year comparisons for these two teams I find useless. But we'll do them anyway. The Bruins, 45, 27, and 10. They had 60 games ending in regulation. They end the year ranking 9th in the power play, 24th on the penalty kill, 4th in face-off percentage, 10th in goals for, 14th in goals allowed, 6th in shooting percentage, and 31st in penalty minutes. Buffalo, with a 50-23-9 record with 51 games ending in regulation, ends the year ranking 21st on the power play, 4th in the penalty kill, 32nd in faceoff percentage, 5th in goals for, 10th in goals allowed, 5th in shooting percentage, and 26th in penalty minutes. The Bruins went 3-1-0 against Buffalo this year, two of those wins coming in overtime. I think there's very little information outside of style of play that can be gleaned from the four regular season matchups, especially with how good Buffalo got in the second half of the year and how bad they were to start the year. And of course, the Bruins have had pockets of play which were abysmal versus pockets of play which were dominant. Very, very strange teams to keep track of. Since the Olympic break, which we do this every year with these because I find far more information to be valid when you talk about the 2 months leading up to the playoffs rather than the entire 7 month season. Since the Olympic break, and any of the advanced stats are at 5-on-5, even strength, not including the special teams. But since the Olympic break, the overall records for the teams, Boston was 13-7-5. They were 19th in goals for per game, 7th in goals allowed per game, 27th on the power play, 17th on the penalty kill. They had they were 26th in expected goals for percentage with 47% just around, 8th in actual goals for percentage at 55%. They are 5th in team save percentage and 10th in shooting percentage. So PDO ranks high. They rank 10th in the league in that time. PDO, again, is a combination between shooting percentage and team save percentage, largely looked at as a luck factor across short-term windows. Buffalo, they went 18-4-3 since the Olympic break. Literally the best team in the league during that time frame. They were 3rd in goals for per game, 5th in goals allowed per game, 22nd ranked power play, 13th penalty kill, 12th in expected goals for percentage at 52%, 1st in actual percentage with a ridiculous 63% of goals for. 3rd in team save percentage and 6th in shooting percentage. Their PDO through that time frame ranks 6th. Again, being a potential luck factor stat. Advantage Buffalo, clearly, right? They had the better record. They had the way better expected goals for percentage, the way better actual goals for percentage. All of their rankings are higher. This is just a no-brainer, right? Sure. I believe the Sabres should be favored in this matchup, even if you were to throw away home ice, which we are going to talk about in a moment. But while Buffalo's numbers have continued to improve through the season, there is still an element of both these teams largely outperforming their expectations this year, which means a matchup between them shouldn't be easy to predict based on the percentage-based stats over a long-term format. We all know that it's one game at a time right now. This series just feels like the absolute epitome of that. The numbers would still indicate the advantage should be for Buffalo. And considering that they've raised their floor while getting to the end of the season, both in the advanced metrics and actual results, while the Bruins maintained a certain level of play, it was on and off through the year, but in small spurts, their underlying metrics stayed bad the entire time. Just an interesting concept there. So what are the actual storylines of the series? We're not going to do this in a very particular order, but I want to start with the special teams. Will special teams actually be a difference maker? The problem is, anyone who says they know what the special teams output is going to be based off the regular season, probably a little overconfident in what they believe. I typically don't like to deep dive special teams because even though they often decide a playoff series, they are nearly impossible to truly predict. The playoffs offers everyone a reset, and it's not unusual to see special teams that were cold or hot in the regular season go the other direction for 10 days and ruin a playoff run or boost you past a superior opponent, on paper. That being said, I've got nothing on these teams because both teams' special teams have been somewhere between bad and middling since the Olympic break, as the numbers before dictated. We will always have conversations about one getting hot and deciding a matchup, but right now, there's just no way to predict it. Like the Sabres, I'll go back to you real quick. They're 22nd ranked power play since the Olympics, despite the record they have. 13th on the penalty kill. Bruins are worse, 27th on the power play and 17th on the penalty kill in that same time frame. There's just, maybe they're just a non-factor Or it's whichever team can get a little more out of them. But either way, predicting special teams, just absolutely a no for me. Find someone smarter than I am. Goaltending. As always, you have to talk about goaltending going into a matchup. And a lot of Bruins fans seem confident because it is the one area where you can purely say the Bruins should have an advantage. With very little debate, they should have an advantage. All of the stats, by the way, the advanced metrics are from Natural Stat Trick as I go through this. But real quick, Swayman's season, 31-18-4, a 2.71 goals allowed average and a 908 save percentage. Ukko Pekkalukkonen, who we're going to focus on as he should be the game one starter for Buffalo despite Alex Lyon. Not despite Alex Lyon, because Alex Lyon is injured and coming back from injury, but Alex Lyon has had a very good season as well. We'll talk about him in a second. But Ukko Pekkalukkonen, 22-9-3, a 2.52 goals allowed average compared to Swayman's 2.71, and a 910 save percentage compared to the 908 from Swayman. Swayman has 20 playoff game appearances. He's a 2.38 goals allowed average during those and a 922 save percentage. Ukko Pekkalukkonen has not played a playoff game. Now, you heard those numbers, right? And UPLs are better. The box scores don't support the opinion that the Bruins have a distinct advantage in this area. UPL has the better numbers in save percentage and goals allowed per game. But when you look under the hood, there's a staggering difference between what the two goaltenders have faced this year. At 5-on-5, Swayman has faced the fourth most expected goals against per 60 minutes among goaltenders with at least 1,200 minutes played, meaning about 20 games. UPL sits 41st in that category. At 5-on-5, Swayman is far beyond UPL's numbers in goals saved above expected per 60, high danger save percentage, rebound chances against, indicating that the rebound control has been better, although you can make the argument that maybe he's getting better support from his defenseman, usually a mix of the two. Even strength save percentage and even strength goals allowed average. It's really only on the penalty kill where UPL has made up the ground on season total numbers, where he ranks as a top five goaltender in nearly every stat, while Swayman is actually near the bottom. There's a whole different conversation about special teams, again, that we can get into, but I'm not doing it. I'm just not doing that one. In a nutshell, Swayman has been in a much more difficult position, facing a much harder workload than UPL, and is still putting up similar overall numbers. I do think it's important to note, Swayman, while he has shown to hit a higher level in the playoffs, if he falters, there is no other option. The Bruins cannot go to Korpisalo outside of a disaster or injury. Korpi should not be trusted in a playoff series. Yes, he's had some bright spots this year. He has also cost us games. You're looking to Swayman, your $8.5 million goaltender, to be the guy. You should not be going to Korpisalo at any point outside of injury. And that means that if Swayman does crack, that's it. UPL, on the other hand, he may not have any experience in the postseason, but if he does struggle, Alex Lyon has put together a very strong season as well that could not only offer an improvement in net, but could give a jump to the Sabres in a series that might not be going the way they want to initially. The pressure should be on the Buffalo Sabres in this series. You're the 2 seed, we're the 7 seed. I don't know what the mentality really is in Buffalo, particularly in the locker room. I'm hoping that pressure is really settling in with them, and maybe the lack of playoff experience matters here. I usually don't jump in to this being, well, experience matters a ton. I think it matters a little, but at the end of the day, in a series like this, I don't think it's going to make the difference. It does feel like we're going to go through all the usuals here. We did special teams, we did goaltender. Who gets hot? All right, we're going to have this conversation. Who gets hot in the power play? Who gets hot in the penalty kill? Whose goaltender gets hot? Every time we talk about this, and every talk show on the NHL is going to be talking about, okay, well, you know, which goaltender can steal more games? And yeah, I mean, it's all valid conversation. It's hockey conversation. It's what we love to do. Usually, when you're looking at this topic, you're going to talk about who's in net. But this year, at 5-on-5, the Bruins have an 8% gap between their goals for percentage in reality and their expected goals for percentage. In reality, they earn about 54% of goals at 5-on-5. Their expected output, 46%. They should be losing more often. Buffalo has about a 5% difference, with a 55% goals for percentage and a 50% expected goals for percentage. The last couple of months, obviously lifting that out of the negatives for them. There is a reason why the nerds, such as myself, are calling this the PDO Bowl, the Luck Bowl, right? Bruins have scored 15 more goals than expected at 5-on-5, but have allowed a whopping 42 less than expected. Buffalo are finding more consistency on both sides, scoring 15 more and allowing 22 less. These are two teams that the underlying metrics are completely bonkers on. That's why when I say who gets hot, I'm not really talking about the netminder or the... Obviously, those things play a role. Special teams, whatever does get hot. For me, this is more who continues to be hot. Both teams having top six shooting percentages and top eight team save percentages at 5-on-5, despite the underlying numbers for the Bruins suggesting a bottom five team in chance creation over opponent and a middle of the pack team in the same category for Buffalo, makes this a really difficult series to predict. So I think this, it really comes down to who can maintain their anti-analytic wave longer. The scary thing is Buffalo has elevated their game through this season. And although they are outperforming those underlying metrics, they are lifting those expected numbers as the season continues. Boston is not, and just keeps outperforming them at an astounding rate. It is a ridiculous rate. For both of the teams, it's pretty ridiculous. I'm not saying this comes down to who gets or stays lucky. It just has to be pointed out that the modern analytics really struggle with these teams making a lot of the data for it just ridiculous. It's tough to digest. So when you talk about the who gets hot conversation, you're actually just talking about, okay, well, is Geeky gonna score 8 goals in this series? Or is he gonna go back to scoring 0 like he did for those 15 games? Right? Is Pasternak gonna be able to set up his line mates for enough and the power play for enough chances to outscore their creation? Because again, over the last month, especially the Bruins offense, super stagnant and has really struggled to put together real scoring opportunities, but they have been opportunistic. There is a world where one of these teams just has their game fall apart, whether it's against each other or in the next round. It's just a really weird dynamic that you don't typically see. And it might be one of the better opportunities for Boston because of it. And I'll actually jump into that more in a second. Let's talk about the home versus away records. This is a quick mention here because Buffalo is excellent both home and away, earning 26 wins at home and 24 out of town. The Bruins were 9 games under true 500 on the road, going 16-16-9. And at home, they are very strong, 29-10-2. Concerning for a team who likely does not get home advantage at any point in the playoffs. So you go to game 7, you really don't feel good if you're Boston. I will say, style-wise, I don't think Buffalo wants a long series either. That's what's really going to be a colliding factor here. Because physically, the longer this goes on, you would start to lean the advantage more towards Boston. Or at least you're eliminating the advantage for Buffalo. Game 7 would still be a coin flip. But you're hoping that the system they built with the rough, tough, grit, piss and vinegar style does come into play in game 6 and 7. So one of my biggest factors of this, and this is the last thing I'll say before I get into the predictions. Will Buffalo give Boston offense? This is by far to me the largest point that needs to be made about this series. Yes, goaltending is important. Special teams are important. There's going to be an element of can the Bruins prevent long shifts in their offense, in their defensive zone from Buffalo. All of that's going to be a thing. But what I found truly interesting about this matchup, the first thought when you have Buffalo facing Boston in playoffs is about their youth and playoff inexperience. I'm putting no stock in that. None of that matters to me. The style of play between these two teams. Buffalo is faster. They win races to the puck at a higher rate than Boston. They utilize transition attack and create odd man rushes at a higher rate than Boston. They possess the puck with more success and are able to create longer offensive possessions than Boston. If the Bruins get into a track meet, the advantage is a significant, significant boost to Buffalo. But as far as a 2 seed versus 7 seed goes, I think Boston is pretty happy with the draw. Buffalo's offense is very good and is particularly dangerous due to the speed and decision-making during their defensive breakouts. Insanely important to the game of hockey in general. Year after year, we more and more talk about forecheck being a decisive factor to these things. But when a sequence for Buffalo is interrupted in their zone, when they think they're breaking out and they don't, all momentum is forward. Their skates are all turned up ice. It is not uncommon for them to get caught with too many guys forward if they fail their breakout. Now, of course, that's normal for many teams by the design. The Bruins, over the past few weeks, I feel, or past couple months, have tried to do more of the, all right, we'll keep it in a little tight. We will have a cherry picker up front, but we need these passing lanes open. Buffalo really relies on that transition to create opportunities. And a lot of it comes from Dahlin, from Power, Byram, Samuelson. None of the projected top four of the Sabres hesitates to join the rush on breakouts from the back end. But that also means that skates are moving in a uniform direction when a turnover does happen. And the Bruins have built their neutral zone and their forechecking pressure off turnover creation. The Bruins' focus is to pressure through a designed system to close passing lanes out. You start with your top forward, your F1, however you want to refer to them. They are trying to force the puck carrier to one side or the other, right? Cut the ice in half. You have your two forwards behind. One of them, depending on the side that's chosen, what strong side ends up being, is ready to make a move in support of that F1, but is also trying to make sure that they're keeping things to the outside. The other one is looking at those pass lanes, trying to minimize the opportunity for a cross-ice chance. They don't want them going diagonal, but they do want them to attempt it, knowing they can steal that puck. You'll see it as they build out their defense, especially if the camera widens a little bit during the games. You can see how they sit, and that weak side forward is just looking for that moment to jump in and steal something trying to cut across. A lot of this is dictated by what that top forward does. If the top forward feels like they have an opportunity to create pressure and they move in, it does send a ripple effect through the other forwards to close. That forechecking pressure, we talk about timing a lot. If that is on time and the Bruins can create difficulties for the Sabres with their forecheck, it's going to cause one of two things. One is a absolute win, which is the Sabres resetting their attack. If they are not given the opportunity to move with numbers up ice in transition, right? Turnover happens by the Bruins or loose puck is picked up by the Sabres and off they go. You slow that down, they have to pass back and reset. That's a win. That's a win of that possession every time. That's your first goal, right? Because you're taking away one of their best means of scoring. The second, of course, is to create a turnover. That is where you're going to build your offense from. Now, of course, the Bruins are going to need to have sustained offense at times. They're going to need to create their own offense that does not require turnovers. But the Sabres should be a little more vulnerable to these turnovers when it comes to creating high danger chances off them. Because they're a breakout team like this, because their defense gets so involved, you earning those turnovers will result in higher danger chances, which you typically wouldn't be getting. So I think the biggest aspect of this series from Boston's side is how effective and timely their forecheck can be. The fourth line has a possibility to be major game changers in this series. When we talk about the 6-7 game series, if they can push it that long, if you have your neutral zone defense set up the way you want it, and the forechecking is doing what it's doing as well, one thing that you're really hoping to build in the Sabres is this level of impatience, this level of frustration, right? You get under their skin, sure, you get them running around, But when you have a younger player, or really any player, who now this is day 12, this is game 6, you've seen these guys over and over and over again, and they're in your face again, and they're finishing their checks even though you're getting rid of the puck again. And finally you just go, we're not getting any pucks through, we got to go for something. And you throw it up the ice, and it's just an absolute meatball. That's what the Bruins are looking to build. If you get a later series, go into 6 or 7 games, you're hoping to earn more of those opportunities through sheer frustration that you've created. What is important about that, though, and what people are not going to mention, you kill that when you push momentum back to them. So while this is a series-long attempt to create these frustrations, you can be in game 7 and you create one of those opportunities that frustration builds, but then you take an offensive zone penalty and all of a sudden the Sabres get a really good power play even if they don't score. 1.5 minutes in your zone, create some chances, boys are running around. Oh, all of that momentum comes right back and you reset. So it's easier to build it back up in game 7, but you can get rid of it just as easily. Discipline's going to really matter here. All that being said, if the Sabres are able to solve the forecheck or the neutral zone defense and it just doesn't slow them down, Swayman's going to be up to superhuman. He's going to have to be superhuman to drag the Bruins to the next round. Because offensively, Buffalo can bring it. They can really bring it. The Bruins are going to have to find a way to get it muddy in the middle and just slow things down, which is fine. Like, it's just two differently built teams, right? It doesn't really mean one thing or another. Oftentimes people are like, well, speed kills and that's what makes a good team. And although I really wish the Bruins had more speed, there's multiple ways to tackle this problem. And the Bruins have been built on beef. You just have to be able to actually use it. It's not like Buffalo's small either. I'd say it's not a team that's going to be easy to wear down, but this Bruins team is capable of it. Predictions-wise, typically I don't do predictions because I'm just very stitious, superstitious. I don't like it, but I've said all year that this is house money, so this will be fun, right? This will be fun. The Bruins have done nothing to build your confidence coming into the postseason as they lost 5 of their last 7. But we did say all year that this is a style of play that fits the playoffs. So we'll see if the Bruins can utilize that to the way we had talked about it. I think the Sabres should be favored in the series. But if Sweeney built the team he thinks he did, this should be a long, arduous task for them. And because it's house money, I'm going to go with Bruins in 6th. Hell yeah, boys, go Hey guys, thank you so much for watching this video and joining me as we experience this crazy Bruins season together. The names popping up on your screen now are from the top line tier and the all-star tier of the YouTube membership program for this YouTube channel. I greatly appreciate each and every one of you who helps support the channel so that we can do more fun things. And I am always open to more ideas of how I can help give back to those who support the channel. At the end of the day, this channel is always going to be about the community and I want to continue to grow that way. So please always feel free to reach out with new ideas and fun ways we can expand on this. Or if you just need someone to talk to, I'm always here for you guys. Thank you all for your support. And as always, go Bees!